You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
It's a zoo!
Well, yeah. Look, these animals need somebody to rescue them.
The animals need to be rescued. Dad, my friends are here. Our life is here.
Man, you got expelled. All right? What am I going to do? I'm going to homeschool you?
No.
Right. So what did we talk about? A new place. A new start.
This is what you want. It's not what I want.
What?
It's a zoo. I'm moving to a zoo.
We bought a zoo!
Yes, we did. We did buy a zoo.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in a hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 81 for the 24th of March, I believe it is, 2012.
Well done, Dave.
The days are all blending into each other, let me tell you. I am David McVeigh, and I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm great, man. Absolutely brilliant.
That's fantastic to hear. And where were you last week, young man?
I don't have to answer that. No, I was taking a rest.
That's fair enough.
I was feeling ill.
We are all entitled to do that. Now, Richard was supposed to be on the show this week, but I'm not sure where he is at this moment. But he was complaining also of not feeling very well, so it's a very good chance that he's also come down with something. So we will muddle our way through without him. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we are going to review The Hunger Games. We're also going to have a little look at what we've been watching throughout the week. And we've got a brand new list of five hunting movies. I wonder what inspired that. anyway.
I've been watching a film recently, something about games and hunting. Perhaps that was something to do.
And they might have been hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or something along those lines. Anyway, we will come back to that a little bit later on. First of all, though, we always start this show by talking a little bit about what we've been watching throughout the week. It's our chance to cover some other films that aren't necessarily either new releases or aren't necessarily films that are our featured review, but give us a chance to talk about other stuff that has come out throughout the week. Now, in my particular case, mine's actually a film that came out a little while ago I didn't get a chance to see. Now, I also mentioned I saw The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Go back and listen to Film Actually News. I already talked about that one. But this week, I also got a chance to catch up with Cameron Crowe's We Bought a Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we actually talked about this film when the trailer first hit, and we said we were kind of sitting on the fence going, it could be okay, it could be a little bit schmaltzy. Cameron Crowe can go in two different directions. I finally watched it, and I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really sweet film and a fantastic performance by the little girl, whose name has gone out of my head right now, but his youngest daughter, she's just terrific. She's the one who goes, we bought a zoo! And she's terrific. It's a fun little film, and the fact that it's a true story actually makes it even more interesting to watch, because you sit there going, wow, I just can't believe this guy did this.
It's a weird concept.
It is a weird concept. It's good, though. It's a really good film, and I really enjoyed Matt Damon in it. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah. All right. Interesting. I might have to track it down and disagree with you entirely.
You may just do that.
Come on. But, we all know I'm bitter and, you know.
Although I must say that when we saw the trailer, you were actually more positive on this film than I was.
That's true.
So there's a very good chance that you may actually really enjoy this movie. Right. What have you been watching this week, Josh?
Well, I went back and introduced my wonderful fiancée, Celine, to Traffic. Which was good to watch again. That film is in itself almost a trip. It's a really, really interesting film when you actually break down its message. And it's slow and it's languid, but it's interesting. On a second watch, I didn't find myself getting bored. It takes time to tell its story, but I think unlike some of his further on films, I think he really had the cutting of it all together, very well organized. And I feel like it really worked.
I think Traffic is a terrific film. I think it's a very ambitious project, and I think that Soderbergh pulled it off really well. It's actually a really good miniseries. Have you ever seen the original British miniseries it's based on? It's already a really good source material, and Soderbergh managed to take what was essentially a very long miniseries and turned it into a feature film that was episodic but cohesive.
Yeah, no, I think it really worked. I think that that's where he got his formula from for all of his other films, basically. And I like the way he tells them. I think he misses sometimes and he hits others, and I think this is definitely one of his hits.
Yeah, I think one of his misses would be Shay, but that's beside the point. But
let's not dig too deep on the things that he's done wrong. You'll get me all upset.
No, but that, you're right. I mean, it's the same formula that really does permeate things like Contagion and all sorts of other stuff.
Exactly. Look, this has been my problem when we talked about Contagion. The man's been making the same film for years.
Yeah.
but it's like when he does it right, he really gets it right. When he doesn't, he just misses entirely.
Yeah. I quite liked Contagion. I just thought it was a little bit cold. That's the problem I had with it. But Traffic is one I really should go back and have a look at again, because I really did enjoy Traffic when I saw it.
It would be that, and the other one I watched was Memento last night.
Oh, no, that is a great film.
Yes, and I love going back and watching it. I give myself, 6 months to a year every time I do it, and then I'll go back and watch it again, because it's like that gives me just enough time to get cloudy on some of the things. And if I get cloudy, then I can kind of watch it with an appreciation again. I think if you really know what's going to happen in every scene, it does lose a bit of its effectiveness. But if you can go into it, even forgetting certain parts or how they connect, there's a really good film in there.
But also, it's a film that you need to see several times to really get it all.
Yeah.
There's so much happening.
I think that tying all the little loose ends together and watching the scenes a bit more closely is a lot easier to do when you're not struggling to figure out what's going on.
Agreed. No, very, very, very good. Now, do you have something from the basement?
I do.
Good evening and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Getting better every time, Dave.
Why, thank you, sir.
I was just waiting for the music to tune
in. Yeah, me too.
I locked in a film this week, which is called In God's Hands. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's a surfing film, and I remember watching it and at the time being quite into it. I have dug this one back up and rewatched it, and it's really not that good. I think at the time it was probably the surfer in me that really kind of tried to connect to it, but it's when you're looking at it a little bit more closely and a little bit less for the finesse that it tries to deliver, it becomes kind of like a pseudo-documentary that is also starring people that obviously know a bit about how to surf. So it's kind of like a massive surf video, but without something like, what was the really famous one? Never Ending Summer or...
Big Wednesday and...
Yeah.
There's a few of them out there, yeah.
But Endless Summer. It, yeah, the Endless Summer, that's it. The concept behind it is essentially searching for the perfect wave. We've all heard this before. The concept is to make it a bit more spiritual. So it's kind of we follow a character that kind of is looking for it endlessly, and this is his life. It really kind of loses itself. I remember liking it a lot for the surfing, and watching it on a second viewing, I was very disappointed to find out that it doesn't translate very well. It hasn't aged. It's trying to be very artistic, and it just doesn't have the team behind it to really pull that off. Unfortunately, goes into my pile of films that you don't really need to go watch.
It's really fun when you actually start one of these reviews, because you were starting to talk about it, and I was going, oh, yeah, and you went, and it's really not very good.
Well, it's always the key that you're waiting for. Do I spend my money on this one or not?
Yeah,
I've noticed a few new ones popping up in the bargain bin, so we'll have some really interesting ones over the next few weeks. But, I've just been biding my time and getting a few ones that seemed a bit different, but I think I'm going to go back to the horror tip and see if I can find something truly terrible.
Fair enough. Well, we always look forward to the Bargain Basement films.
Ah, so. Yes.
All right, we should move on to a feature film review, though. So from bargain basement to big budget, let's talk about The Hunger Games.
Let's talk a bit about it in general. Like, it's an interesting concept whenever this sort of stuff happens. And
well, hold that thought. Let's get some details in here first, and basically say that this is a film directed by Gary Ross, and it is written by, and which I thought was interesting. It's written by Gary Ross, the director, Billy Ray, and Suzanne Collins, who also it's based on her book. So she actually was involved in the writing of the screenplay. Now the film stars Jennifer Lawrence, the eyebrows that are Wes Bentley, Elizabeth Banks, Stanley Tucci, what's his name from Journey to the Center of the Earth. Josh Hutcherson. And of course we shouldn't forget Woody Harrelson.
Oh, how can you?
How can you? Absolutely. Now, according to IMDb, let's see how accurate they are this time. It says, set in a future where the Capitol selects a boy and a girl from the 12 districts to fight to the death on live television. Katniss Everdeen volunteers to take her younger sister's place for the latest match. Well, it's pretty brief, but it does kind of really say what it is.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's have a look at the trailer, and we'll come back and talk about this, because we never actually got a chance to talk after the film, so I don't know what you think of this film. Yes. So let's have a look at the trailer, and we'll come right back.
We could do it, you know. Take off, live in the woods.
They'd catch us.
Well, maybe not.
We wouldn't make it 5 miles.
To select one courageous young man and woman for the honor of representing District 12 in the 74th annual Hunger Games.
It's your first year, Prim. Your name's only been in there once. They're not gonna pick you.
Primrose Everdeen.
Prim! The volunteer!
I volunteer as tribute.
Our tributes, Peter Mallark and Katniss Everdeen.
They just want a good show. That's all they want.
There's 24 of us, Gail. Only one comes out.
So you're here to make me look pretty?
I'm here to help you make an impression.
And so it was decreed that each year, the 12 districts of Pan Am shall offer up in tribute one young man and woman between the ages of 12 and 18 to be trained in the art of survival and to be prepared to fight to the death.
This is the time to show them everything. Make sure they remember you.
I just keep wishing that I could think of a way to show them that they don't own me. If I'm gonna die, I want to still be me.
I just can't afford to think like that.
All right, so Josh, what were your thoughts? Oh, we should also mention, we forgot to mention Donald Sutherland is in the cast as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, kind of important. Kind of. So Josh, what were your thoughts on The Hunger Games?
Well, look, I just want to go back a little bit before we go into this and talk about what is this, because I found out that not everybody knows the full situation behind this. So we know it's based on a book, and the concept is that it's part of three parts. And a lot of people have been leveling towards the ending of this film, talking about certain aspects of it, which I just want to explain to people that may not have seen this film and don't understand where I'm coming from when I talk about it. It's part of three films, so it's kind of almost both a crescendo and also a setup at the same time. Kind of like, I think the second Star Wars film. I'm not comparing them on standards right now, so don't get into that with me. But the thing that I find quite interesting is I was really into the concept of this film. Like, the idea behind it is fine. We've seen this story play out throughout history several times in different films. The concept of rebellion, giving it a twist on a media slant is interesting, in my opinion. Bringing it that kind of almost combining several types of films together. I'm not against any of these problems, but I said that the biggest thing that I think that I thought that I wasn't going to like about this film was the fact that it's not aimed at my generation. It's aimed at teens. This is my biggest issue with the film is essentially I went in there and I watched this and I was on board for the first bit. I think the concept is well developed in the fact that they've at least sat down and gone, we can make three movies and an interesting story out of this world we've created. I don't connect very well with it because I think that the fact that this has been going on for a while just seems a little bit odd to me. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I mean, it's a human spirit issue for me. It's like the concept of people just living in small towns and that's their thing. And once a year they have to give up one of their child, but they're okay with that because that's how it works. It's like, to me, I can very, very little see that just working for as long as it apparently has. But I got past that and I got to the middle of the film, and though I don't agree with it and I don't like the way they did it, I thought it was an interesting and unique universe and it was an interesting characters that they had set up, but everything's a cliche. Everything's something I've already seen before. Like, none of these creations or interesting ideas that they've come up with are theirs. They're all from somewhere else. And by the halfway mark, I was like, the only redeeming feature you can do for this film for me is essentially if you really nail the actual Hunger Games. And they don't. Because my problem is that it just goes all over the place. It's like Battle Royale with a PG rating. So you lose all of the visceral nature to it. And I don't feel like anyone's really ever in any huge amount of danger. They jump so readily from one extreme to the other. Like, you know, you've got these people fighting really, really quickly and then nothing happens for like 3 days and they all dance around or go off and do something. And it's like when someone dies, they like put flowers all around them. And I'm like, wait, no what? Like, you, there's supposed to be things out there going to kill you and it never feels like anyone's in real danger until the last moments where somebody finally gets attacked. And then on top of that, I don't feel like they wrapped it up well. I feel like the concept leads them into the second film, but it's almost like the first film is just a throwaway. Like, it's almost all set up. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't get into any of that. It's like the biggest problem that I have with this film is for a film with such a heavy, impacted message, it just completely misses what it was trying to deliver because I don't feel like these games have any validity or weight. I don't feel like at some stages you're feeling like it's all kind of like lackluster and sort of lightweight, and then at others they're trying to throw this really heavy message without any blood or any feeling like damage has really been done. And the only thing that works in the entire film is when one of the younger cast members gets outed.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in spoilers because that's actually a moment in there that I actually really want to talk about as well. I know the scene you're talking about entirely.
Yeah.
We'll come
and this
back.
This is the thing. It's like it just misses for me, and it's like I don't hate this film, and I'm sure that when they get to the end of the trilogy, it'll probably make up an almost decent trilogy. But it's still part of that Twilight era of filmmaking where it's like everything just doesn't seem to have the right emotions attached to it. Mm-hmm. Like it all feels like it's told from a teen's perspective with a whole lot of drama around it, and it's missing what is the important core, which is the actual message you're trying to sell in your film. And it just becomes a teen romance instead of what it's trying to sell.
And I want to talk about that in spoilers too, because it's one of the issues of this film that really didn't work for me.
Anyway, I've been doing all the talking. Dave,
yeah, I'm going to say I'm kind of with you. I didn't hate this movie.
That probably sounds like I did, but yeah, I didn't hate this film.
I was actually incredibly surprised at how much I kind of enjoyed watching this movie. That's not to say it's a good movie. I enjoyed watching it though. And it was a film that for 2 hours and 20 minutes actually kicked along at a fairly brisk pace and didn't feel like 2 hours and 20 minutes. So I give it credit for that. But there are elements of this film that just don't work. One of those elements being the romance, which we'll come back to in spoilers because of how that happens, but did not buy it at all. I think that Gary Ross is a terrible action director. He does not know how to shoot an action scene at all. All the action scenes are way too tight. They're muddied. They're muddled. And it's like I don't really know how to put this together. So if we put the camera really close in, nobody will notice.
It's that horrible. It started for me with fucking Chronicles of Riddick back in the day, where it was like fights that aren't fights. They're just motion blur. And
yeah, no, dude, the first time I ever saw this, the film that started all of this was Lethal Weapon, which was that last scene in Lethal Weapon where they have the fight at the end, and they just, you know, Mel Gibson's obviously not a real fighter, and they have to make this look like it's a really, really, you know, fantastic fight scene. So they put it in the rain with weird slow motion and speed ups and put the camera in so close that it's just a series of blurry movements that you can't actually see that they don't know how to fight. And you get this impression that you go, oh, wow, that must have been a really good fight scene because I couldn't see what was going on. Problem is, that works in Lethal Weapon to a degree because it's a very short scene in a very long movie that is actually a very good film. In this case, though, it's every action scene. And you know when
takes away the weight from it, doesn't it?
It does. And do you know when it really struck me? The moment that it really struck me in particular was near the end of the film, and I won't spoil what it is, but there's a fight scene going on top of the structure. And they're really uptight and close and doing everything that they've done throughout the whole film. And then suddenly we cut to this big wide shot above, and you see them walking towards each other. And then it cuts back in, and they're really close and fighting each other again. And that one wide shot is jarring because suddenly you go, ooh, I can see what's going on. You know? it's like this one glaring shot in the middle where you go, I want the rest of the film to look like that. You know what I mean? So I can actually see what's going on during these fight scenes. It's actually the DJ Caruso school of action, you know, where he doesn't really know how to shoot action. So we just get him really tight and hopefully people are baffled by our bullshit, you know? But that being said, I thought that one of my worries, of course, was Jennifer Lawrence. I thought Jennifer Lawrence was extraordinary in Winter's Bone, the film that she was nominated for an Oscar for. But I've never thought that she was particularly strong since. I thought she was kind of weak in X-Men First Class, and she's worried me because I'm kind of going, was she a one-shot wonder?
Yeah.
And I thought she did a really good job in this. I thought she actually held her own, and she was okay as Katniss, you know?
How'd you find the other cast members, though?
Well, I thought almost every other teen in this was generic. Josh Hutcherson just does what Josh Hutcherson does. Her boyfriend was just, you know, he looked like he's a reject from the cast of Grease. You know, and the bad guy teens were all just so stereotyped that you never got to know them. You know, they were just meathead bad guys, you know?
Yeah.
So you really never got to know any of them. As far as the adults in this were concerned, I was kind of mesmerized by the production design more than their performances. The makeup and the weird beards and, you know, it's like, it was this weird world.
It's the first film when Bentley was on screen, I wasn't actually staring at his eyebrows because it was kind of a 50-50. They had done something with his face that was just enough to take full attention off his eyebrows.
Oh, that beard design was amazing. It was amazing. It was inspired. The only two, adult cast members that I actually was interested in all were Woody Harrelson, who I thought was interesting.
He was just playing Woody Harrelson, but he was doing a good job.
And I thought that the character of Effie, played by Elizabeth Banks, was kind of interesting because when you first meet her, she's that whole welcome person. And as the film goes on, you can kind of see her losing her composure. Because she's losing control of the situation. And I kind of like that. I kind of like the fact that I didn't actually know it was Elizabeth Banks. I'm watching this film going, I know this actress. Why do I know this actress? And of course, it's Elizabeth Banks. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, you're actually doing something interesting with this. It's because there's depth to there that we're not exploring enough, but we are seeing a little bit of depth behind that character. But look, overall, I thought this was an okay film. As I said to Richard when I walked out of the cinema, I said, you know, I would probably own this on Blu-ray. I'd probably watch it again, you know? And the thing is, if you had to compare it to a film, you've got the comparisons are going to happen, that it's going to be compared to the Twilight series because they're the same demographic. And if you're going to compare it to that, this is a far better film than Twilight.
Oh, no question. You know? I definitely would not see it on my rack. And that's only because at this stage, I'm waiting until the second film comes out. Show me what you can do with it now. It's not bad enough that I hate it, but it's not good enough that I sit there and go, okay, yep, I'm on board. You guys do whatever you want to do. I'm sitting there going, you told a story. It misses steps. People like us are going to criticize it for these things.
Yeah.
And then you can take that and put that into a second film. If they can move on, like, and I know that you don't agree with me necessarily on this, Dave, but you do to a certain extent. If they can do what they did with Twilight, where they actually at least put more into it.
Oh, like, no, I'm right there with you. I agree with you 100% that the sequels to Twilight are a better film than Twilight.
If that's where you're going to start from.
Yeah, this is a better starting position, put it that way.
Oh, dude, absolutely. And it's like, with a lot of these sort of things that come out of a new generation, you very often pull from generations before that. It's like, it's not so much new, but it's that generation's introduction to these sort of concepts. And for that reason, I don't hate it, because I think that it maintains decent enough composure and direction that it still tells its story. I think that it totally missed, considering I've seen films tell it with a lot more strength.
Well, and also, I mean, let's face it. All of these, Battle Royale, Hunger Games, everything else, I mean, we're all paying homage to Ender's Game anyway. You know what I mean? And this story is a very old story. The idea of pitting people against each other and hunting humans is a very old story, you know? And so, I mean, even back in the 80s, I mean, to a degree, I mean, The Running Man kind of covered this territory as well, you know? So we've done this to death. I mean, this concept of pitting people against each other to the death and then the person coming up against the system, basically, is kind of been done to death. It's not the worst of those kinds of films. And I think that we look at it and go, you know, it's all right. I'm going to have to see it again because I have to take Nicholas to see it because he really wants to see it. So I will see it again. And it's not a film where I sit and go, oh, God, I have to see it again. I go, yeah, I'll watch it again. You know, I have no problem seeing it again. So in that sense, you know, it's an okay film. It's not, I don't think it is a masterpiece, and I don't think it is a film where I think it, unless the sequels are astounding, I don't think it's a film that's going to be remembered in 15 years. You know, I think it'll come and go, you know?
I think that you have to rely on whether or not the generation's going to pick it up.
Well, yeah, and it depends on whether or not this current generation, who are obsessed by the books and love the movie, are going to pass it on to their kids. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes
down to. It's the kind of thing that I would hope that people will show them other examples, and those other examples might hit a little harder.
Yeah, well, and we do have to wait, of course, because Ender's Game is in production. And so, and I really feel kind of sorry for Ender's Game at this point, because it's going to be compared to Hunger Games. And that's kind of unfair, considering it was actually first. You know what I mean?
Dude, if they play that, have you read the book?
I haven't, but I know a lot about it. I've heard a lot about it. And I know that you have.
Because, yeah. I'm just saying that if they do this right, there's no way you can compare the two.
Yeah, and they've got a really solid cast on Ender's Game. I mean, Azza, what's his name, from Hugo, is playing Ender, you know? So, look, it's got... The one criticism I had against Hunger Games, and this is actually probably a criticism of the book. I haven't read the book. To be fair, I haven't read the book. Funnily enough, watching the film makes me want to read the book.
I've tried.
Oh, really? It makes me want to read it, because I'm curious to know actually where part 2 and 3 go. I mean, we can kind of see where they're going in this film. It's obviously about the government and, you know, the system and blah, blah, blah. And we can kind of predict what's going to happen in this series, right?
Well, I imagine she'll be picked for a second... go into this thing, and the odds will be against her, and
may the odds ever be in your favor. But but that being said, the biggest issue I had was the fact that the film carries an M rating, and it is about teenagers going into basically a ring and killing each other. And I think the problem is that it's a really brutal concept, and I don't think the film is brutal enough.
Well, I think there's just little things that make me struggle with it, like the concept that there's this ointment that they give people that just fixes things.
Yes.
I have huge issues with that. I'm like, number one, what the fuck is this substance that can just fix wounds and just heal them overnight? But okay, I'll suspend disbelief for just a moment, and I'll go, but it's such a plot device.
Yeah, of course. And I get the whole idea of the little parachuting in med kits and stuff is such a plot device in itself.
But it's interesting. Like, they couldn't they have done something different with it, where they like send them a knife or some rope or something different?
Look, like, minor spoilers, but when they send the guys soup, all I can think is, this is all you could send them. It's like, is that really what you're going to send them in? Anyway, I think we should do a spoiler section on this, because there's a few things I want to talk about in particular. And I don't really, this is too big a film to go spoiling out in the open, because people are going to go, oh, you spoiled it for me. So I think we will do a spoiler section really quickly. Now, I don't have Richard's door sounds here, which is a bit of a shame, but I do have something that we might be able to use. Before we go into spoilers, though, Josh, let's rate this thing. Are you going to recommend this to friends?
No. I'm not gonna talk against it. I wasn't affected enough by it that if somebody went, hey man, should I go see it, that I would say yes. I would just say, yeah. Look, honestly, man, my biggest problem is that this has no more effect than a TV episode or a rental. Like, that's where I'd put it. To me, I've seen everything in this film done differently and in a different context. And I'm not saying all of them are better. I'm not going to try and pretend that Running Man is in any way comparable, like, you know, compared to this film. But it's kind of like, I don't feel that there's enough in this film to be anything more than a weekend watch. Like, to me, it's the kind of thing that I would put on in the background. I would never watch this again with intent.
Fair enough.
So yeah, no, unfortunately.
I'm gonna say, look, there are certain people who are gonna
unless you're a teenager.
Yeah, look,
sorry.
Teenagers are gonna get a lot out of this. I think that I would say to people that it's an okay film. Just don't be expecting very much.
Yeah,
and I think that's really what it comes down to. I'd say, yeah, go see it. I mean, it's a fair enough weekend fodder to go to the cinema, but don't be expecting very much. It's not deep. there's no depth to this. You know what I mean? And that's a bit of a shame, because I think there could have been depth. Anyway, so let's go into the spoiler zone, and I think we'll go in with this.
Ooh, that's gotta hurt.
There you go. You may have had that I just grabbed some Duke Nukem sounds.
Yeah, no, I got that.
All right, so from this point onwards, we are in spoilers. Just a reminder that if you don't want to hear spoilers for The Hunger Games, the time code will be in the show notes, so you can fast forward this section. So, Josh, now that we're in spoilers, let's talk about that little girl getting done. That scene is actually one of my favorite in the film.
Yeah, look, it's probably the most effective for what it does and for what it sets up. I think that that's where the film kind of finds its feet in some ways. It's sort of like, if they had have had a bit more violence, if they had have showed a bit more of the weight, not only on the characters that they want to, but it's got that lighthearted PG feel to something that's supposed to be quite edgy. It's like that girl dying, the message hits.
Yeah.
But all of the other people that die in this film, it's like, well, what? So what? They don't matter? They don't matter because they were in it for themselves.
Well, and what the feeling I got from the film was, I mean, we should be clear, it's not actually PG, it's rated M. But for the film, because it's topic matter, because they are kids, they're, you know, underage, Hollywood doesn't kill kids. We've talked about this before. And you notice that a lot of the deaths take place off screen. So I was wondering how they were going to deal with this.
I can deal with that.
Yeah,
I actually can.
I was actually wondering how they were going to deal with this in this sort of film. I'm thinking 24 enter, only one comes out. You know, we're not going to kill the kids on screen. How are we going to do this? And having the cannon fire off every time one dies, you kind of go, oh, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, there's
which
two scenes.
Is totally stolen from something else. Sorry,
no,
keep going.
I'm sure it is. But there's two scenes in this film where we actually do get the brutality. The first scene is when they first get off the pedestals and they all race to get the bags and the weapons and stuff. And there's flashes of this brutality of people being knifed and just knocked down. And, you know, and you sit there going, when that first came on, I went, wow, are we actually going to go full bore on this now? I thought this is kind of, but then it all tones down.
Yeah,
but
I kind of knew that was going to happen, man. But my biggest problem was that I was getting frustrated through those scenes, because I was like, and I'm not maniacally into violence. It's not that kind of a concept. It's just that when I'm watching a film like this, I'm trying to take part in it.
Yeah.
And when I'm trying to take part in it, I want to know who's dead.
No, the problem is we never got to know any of them either, though.
I know, but I could remember faces from seeing them beforehand, and it's sort of like seeing where they're going with the film, seeing who they're getting rid of and who they're not. And it's sort of like they spend so little time on the characters that it's only the main ones that are ever in focus. Everybody else is just, they're not even cannon fodder. They're like blur in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just blur.
And the only one real brutal sequence in this film that I thought was really well handled was, of course, the death of the little girl who helped Katniss. And that scene where she gets speared. I sat there watching it going, wow, you actually went there. You did that. You did that on screen, and I applaud you, sir, for doing that. You
know? Yeah.
Because I was actually wondering that, because they were actually setting that girl up to be a fairly, you know, sufficient character in this. You know what I mean? Sufficient's not the word I'm looking for, but, you know, character with some substance in her. And I was wondering how they were going to kill her off, because, of course, 24 enter, only one exits. We had to kill them all off. And I'm wondering how they were going to do that and actually manage to, and they just did it. You know, yeah. It's like they just did it right there on screen.
And look, I can imagine, again, I'm only talking in hypotheticals because I haven't read the second two. I couldn't make it through the first book. I imagine that this is a pretty waiting scene, because it's like everyone that watches the game sees it, and everybody sees what happens because of it. And it's sort of like, it's sort of the first wave outwards of what will no doubt be, you know, the sequel and the one after that's kind of cycle of where they're going with it. And look, I may be wrong, but I don't know. I mean, from what I've seen, this doesn't seem like something with a huge amount of surprises in it. I didn't get any surprises in this film, not one. I didn't not see anything coming. Like, I wasn't like, oh God, wow, that was really interesting. It was like, I knew that they were going to kill that girl, like you.
The only thing that was a surprise for me in this film was the really stupid plot device of bringing in the CG animals.
Yeah.
That was just so stupid. And I'm sitting there watching it going, and how are they doing this? And, you know, for a film that...
I don't get it. Yeah, what was that? Were they CG?
I don't understand what it was. I don't understand. They seem to materialize these dogs out of the ground and attack these people until they didn't need them anymore, and then they all just disappeared. And you go, what was that? You
know? And where were they from? What did they do? How did they get there?
What were they made from? You know, it's like, what were they?
It wraps up so quickly, it's painful.
Yeah, and that was the moment. That was the one moment I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Because it didn't make sense.
Yeah. Like I said, I knew that they were going to fast track it. It's like, I was like, there's only 20 minutes left. They're going to fast track this. And then they were like, right, CG dogs. Yeah, that makes sense. Of course.
The other thing I wanted to talk about in spoilers was the love story, which I actually kind of thought was going to be central to the film, which turned out to be an afterthought. But I actually didn't buy this at all.
Yeah.
It was like, they barely spoke to each other and didn't even seem to like each other. Then he makes an admission that he had a crush on her, and then suddenly she's all over him, looking after him. Like, you know, they're the best of friends and possibly going to, you know, have a relationship. Now, okay, granted, there is the issue that she's probably playing it up because she's trying to survive and so forth. But that's not even made clear. It's a really muddled affair.
And to be honest, I think the other problem is that you just don't buy the chemistry at all. Like, even in the moments that they are, like, I think what I got from the film was relatively clear to me, which was that concept that essentially the two of them knew that they had to play it up a lot more than they did so that they could get the support, so that they could get through it. They also knew that when they worked together that they could survive to the end. I understand all this. I really do. I'm not missing the point here.
No, I got that, yeah.
Yeah, my problem is not with the fact that they've done all this. It's the fact that neither of them look like the kind of, like, even mildly like they have any interest in them. And the idea that there was, you know, this connection at some stage, or that he has heartfelt sorrows and has dreamed about her and thought about her for years, it's like, I don't get that feeling. It's sort of, it comes, there you go, that was a surprise for me. That was a surprise for me, genuinely. I was like, I did not see that coming, because I did not think that there was any chemistry between you two at all.
No, exactly. And I just felt like it was just a muddied piece of script writing where it's like, we need to add this in here and we haven't really set it up, but let's just get it in there, you know? And it just failed. That part really, the relationship just failed, because I didn't believe any of it. In whatever the motivation for it was, I didn't believe it. So whether it was a real relationship or whether it was for the cameras, either way, I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, no. And so, and I just thought that just didn't work in any way, shape, or form. All right. So we've got a. I think that's all I've got that I wanted to really talk about. What I really want to talk about was the CG dogs. I don't get them at all. Are we done in spoilers or do you have more?
Done.
All right. You've got done. Let's open these vault doors, which I don't have doors, but we've got this one.
Ooh, that's got to hurt.
And this one.
Blow it out your ass.
There you go. Oh, actually, for leaving the vault, we can do this.
Game over.
There you go.
Dave,
take your pick.
Random things you have on your soundboard.
Take your pick. Any of those work. All right. So, thank you. Welcome back to the show. For those who fast forwarded, we're now going to do our list of five. Inspired by the film The Hunger Games, of course, which is, of course, inspired by any film where there's hunting in it. And we're going to do a list of five hunting films. Now, I basically said five hunting films. Interpret this any way you want. So it could be any kind of hunting in any kind of form. So I'd be very curious to see what's on your list, Josh. Mm. And I'm going to start us off, and I'm going to say my number five is Predator. I think you got an alien hunting humans.
Yep. Stay with that one. We'll come back to it.
All right. We'll come back to that one. You're number five.
My number five is the... It's not a very good film, but it has essences of really cool stuff in it, which is a film called The Edge. Did you ever see it?
Oh, Lee Tamahori? I have seen The Edge. It's with Hannibal Lecter.
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter.
And Alec Baldwin.
Yes. I quite enjoyed The Edge. I completely forgot about that film. I really like that film.
It's not great, and it's not necessarily pitting anyone against each other, but it has these great moments between the two characters of kind of someone that really knows what he's doing, someone that doesn't, but both of them are very clued in, and it's kind of that almost two different worlds meeting and kind of whether or not they are working together or against each other. It's like it has aspects that I think kind of like all of the films on my list have things that I wish they had put in Hunger Games. And that's for me, that's what it is. It's a tension that's done just by literally looks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like it's a tension that you legitimately would see if you pitted a whole bunch of people against each other.
Fantastic. Great list. Great start to the list. I can't wait to see where you go. See, this is why I do I love doing these lists, because you actually remind me of films that I've forgotten about. Because I completely forgot about that film. Okay. My number four is actually First Blood. And I know it's not actually traditionally hunting, but let's face it, it's a manhunt. And they are actually hunting him down. But what I love about that film is, are they hunting him or is he hunting them? I really love that about that film.
No, absolutely. It's a good point. Yeah. Definitely a good pick. My number four is, of course, Predator.
All right, let's talk Predator.
Well, the great thing about Predator, I think, is you can, and I'm not saying throw aliens into the mix, but what I'm saying that really works about Predator is that concept that it's sort of the characters are broken down one after a time, and then sort of the character rises up through it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but essentially he then goes back against them.
Well, it's like the hunted becomes the hunter.
Exactly. And in this film, no one really establishes any visceral roles. Like everybody gets away with things as opposed to actually having to deal with them. You've got evil characters and you've got good characters and there's no middle ground. You know what I mean?
I also love the fact that the film starts in one way and becomes something completely different.
Yeah.
I love that about Predator. I think the first Predator is actually a really fun film. And they misstepped and stumbled their way through sequels and spin-offs and everything until probably Rodriguez has produced Predators, which I quite liked. But Predator still stands as just a perfect popcorn movie. It really does.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, good choice. My number three is the Sidney Poitier film with Tom Berenger that I talked about in a What We've Been Watching section a while ago called Shoot to Kill. Now, once again, not traditionally hunting, but it is about an FBI agent tracking a guy across the wilderness trying to hunt down his killer. And I thought it was just a really, really good adventure film and well worth having a look at.
Cool. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's good. In Australia, it's actually got a different name and it's not available on DVD in this country, which is just a shame. But it's actually called Deadly Pursuit in Australia.
Okay.
All right. So your number three.
My number three is a film we've talked about before called Ghost, The Ghost in the Darkness.
Yes, it was almost on my list, but I knew it would be on yours.
Yeah, Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas. The thing that I liked about this film that I had kind of wished was in Hunger Games is that visceral combat of actually hunting something.
Yeah.
Like for a girl that was really good at hunting, so really got the concept that she was a really good hunter.
Yeah, we never got that. Yeah, I know.
No.
Because we set it up in those opening scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it never came to fruition. I almost put it on my list, but I just knew it was going to be on yours. So. Yeah. Now, my number two is actually, it's a stand-in. Because I couldn't put the film I wanted to put because we vaulted it.
Oh, we did? Was that?
Which was Jaws.
Oh,
because we vaulted it, I couldn't use it. So,
well, you can't use it, so what are you using instead?
I'm standing it in with Alligator. And them hunting it through the sewers trying to get the giant alligator.
Interesting.
It's a good film. I quite like Alligator. It's low budget and cheesy, but it was actually a really fun film. So I remember seeing it back in the 80s at the cinema, and I quite enjoyed it then too. And it's got a great white hunter, complete with hunting suit. You're number two.
My number two isn't on its list because it's a good film. It's on the list because of what it did and what it inspired for the rest of like the next 20 years, which is Running Man.
Oh, of course.
Now, The Running Man isn't a perfect film. Far from it. It's actually really hard for me to watch.
It's actually really hasn't dated well at all.
Yeah. It hasn't, but its concepts are good, and I don't think that, as I said, I don't think, if you compare these side by side, I would be almost tempted to lean towards The Hunger Games. Again, different eras, different classes, different styles, everything. You can't really compare the two together. But what I think that Running Man did better was the concept of at least selling the manicness of the people around it. Mm. Like the really kind of... that fact that you kind of you cloth it all in this beautiful kind of image that it's better than it really is. And I think in this film the riots were bound to happen. Like essentially what they do is they take one of each and then they live stream it back to them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, by the way, here's your kids dying. Yeah, not buying it.
Now, I got to say about Running Man, I give Running Man full props though for being an absolute bitter statement against media.
Exactly.
And I think Hunger Games kind of missed the mark on that. It kind of touched on it, and it really was trying for that with the whole talk show kind of idea with the Stanley Tucci character and all this sort of stuff. But Running Man was like a bitter pill, and
I just say, by the way, can that man do anything wrong?
Not at all. I love that
Stanley
man.
Stanley Tucci is amazing.
Stanley anyway, Tucci's a god, man. Even with the bad hair.
he could wear that hair and make it work.
Absolutely.
Just saying.
I just thought with Running Man when I saw it, I thought this was at the time in the 80s, you went, wow, this is just a statement about American television as it stands today.
It's one of those films that I watch and I'm like, this is more about what it had to say than the actual film itself.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting is it's actually just as relevant today.
Exactly. The message is definitely relevant today, but everything around it lets that film down.
Do you know what the biggest problem with The Running Man is?
And I hate to say it. Do you want me to start by saying Arnold Schwarzenegger, cheesy lines, bad costumes? Where do you want me to start?
That was exactly the biggest problem I had with that film was Schwarzenegger was completely miscast.
Oh, yeah.
It should have been a stronger actor, because if you had a stronger actor in the lead, you almost could have bought the cheesy costumes and everything else. Problem was, it became just a gag fest.
Oh, God, yes.
And it shouldn't have been it. Because we already had Richard Dawson in the lead as the host, and he was... just perfectly sleazy.
Damn,
considering right. that he was actually just playing himself, because he was a real talk show host. You know, he was a real game show host. And you sit there and go, you are perfect in this role, basically mocking yourself. And then it didn't work because you had a really bad Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
You know, and and I just feel like if it wasn't Schwarzenegger, that film might have actually worked a little bit better, especially considering it's based on Stephen King source material.
Yeah. You know?
So anyway, that's a whole different issue. My number one, I think we're up to number ones, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my number one is kind of a cop-out in some ways because it's kind of obvious, but I think The Deer Hunter has to go in at number
Ooh.
One. This is a very serious film about Vietnam, but a great deal of that film is about hunting, and a lot of the bonding that goes on in the first and latter half of the film is during hunting, you know? And you could also kind of equate that to the Vietnam scenes that, you know, there was a lot, they were basically being hunted, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the scenes while they're actually out deer hunting are phenomenal. Some powerful stuff in there. Your number one.
I think you can guess. Do you want to give it a shot, Dave?
I'm going to have a guess and I'm going to say, no, I can't guess. What do you got?
It's Battle Royale.
Of course.
And it is the number one film to pit against Hunger Games because though they're for a different audience and a different era, the effect that Battle Royale has on you is basically unforgettable, in my opinion. It's like when you watch this with no holds barred, like with no camera tricks trying to mask what's going on, without any sort of lightness to the thing, and you just weigh this as a competition against teenagers, against other teenagers, and you make it psychological. Like, none of this, hey, it's a game, we're going to throw items at you every now and then, and it's all wacky and zany. It's like, no, when you actually pit it for what it is, this film just hits me so much harder because no matter how many times I watch Battle Royale, it's confronting. Like, you see teens go from teens to killers.
Yeah.
And you see some of these people that probably wouldn't, unless they were put in the situation, becoming dirty, evil killers. And it's just done so much better.
It makes you wonder what Hunger Games would have been like if they'd gone for the hard R.
If they had gone for the hard R, I'm sure I probably would have connected with it a lot better. But like I said, this film isn't for me.
No, exactly. No, good choice. Very, very good choice. Battle Royale is a hard film to watch, though. It really is.
I love it. It's hard to watch, and that's what I think makes it work.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's it. That's a show, dude.
It is.
We've got a list. We've got a review. We've got what we've been watching. I think we've got a show. I think at this point we need to say, Josh, if people agree or disagree with us, where can they write to us?
I think they can go to feedback at filmactually.com.
Very good.
Right. Yes. Just making sure.
Or they could leave a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. And if you are outside of Sydney, you can always use our Skype ID, which is Geek Actually, all one word. And you can leave us a voicemail and tell us what you think of The Hunger Games or of anything else we've talked about on the show. Now, Josh, where can people find more of you on the internet?
I have the site called rawdlc.com. I do it with a bunch of other guys. We love games. If you also love games, you should go over and check it out because it's full of awesomeness.
Dude, I got to play Mass Effect 3. Can I tell you? I'm biting at the bit for this.
We're talking about it this week. And it's got mixed reviews from the world, man. This is one of those films.
For games, you mean?
I guess it's one of those two.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'll be listening this week because I want to know. All right, and you can, of course, find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Now, we normally have a third person on this show who isn't here, but you can find him at The Real Bits. No, not at The Real Bits. That's not what we want to say. TheRealBits.com is his address, or you can find him at DVD Bits on Twitter, and that's, of course, Richard Gray, who never turned up. I don't know where he went. Anyway. Next week, he's always back again. Now, we do have a couple friends out there we do need to throw a quick shout-outs to. Charlie and Brad are back over at reboundradio.com. They got a whole bunch of podcasts and stuff happening over there, so go check them out. And you can also check out our very good friends over at The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, and they can be found at weekendronan.com or on iTunes. Just search for Real Junkies. They're like us. They do movie reviews, and they've been putting out a lot of stuff lately, but they like to drink a little bit of tequila while they're doing it, and you know, they have a little bit of fun with it as well. So well worth having a listen to, boys. We love you over there. So keep up the good work. And that's it. I think that's a show. Now, next week, we are going to be reviewing. Oh, dear. We're going to be revisiting the Greek mythology again because it's Wrath of the Titans.
Yeah.
I don't know if yeah is the word I'm going to put to
that. I was just getting my testosterone up to the right level. I have no idea what the film's going to be like. Well, you know how I felt about the first one.
Oh,
so
yeah. That's kind of why I'm thinking, wow, are we really going to do this again? Anyway, all I could think is new director, and I believe this time they actually shot it in 3D rather than converted it. So maybe, and he's got hair this time. You know, last time he had that really like shaved head look. This time he's got hair, so maybe that'll make a big difference. I don't know. Look, the trailers are kind of much the same as the first one, so I don't know what it's going to be like. But we'll go into everything with an open mind, because you never know. It could be brilliant. Brilliant. It could be, or it could be crap. But we'll talk more about that next week on this show. And Josh, I want you to have a great night.
I will.
And for those who need to hear this one more time, because we have said this so many times in the past, we're going to say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all again next week. Bye, Josh. Bye,
all
everyone.
All right, man. See you later.
Come away, little lost. Come away to the water. to the water, away from the life that you always knew. We are caught.